You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
How did that happen? Ooh. Kind of interesting little event right there. What was that? Anyway, the wonders of electronics on a daily basis. Good morning to you. It's Thursday, so we'll talk transitions and civilian stuff today. Hope you're having a good morning so far. Mike McNamara in for a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Let me tell you what we're going to do today before I tell you what's bothering me today. Yeah, check it out. I'll tell you what's bothering me. I can't stop. Sorry. But so what is bothering me? Check it out. Go to the Wall Street Journal. Story by Shane Harris and Carol E. Lee. E. Period Lee. And the headline of the story is Spies Keep Intelligence from Donald Trump on Leak Concerns. Okay, something that gets your attention in a hurry. The intelligence community and the President of the United States have been at odds for a while. The fact that this story makes it into a newspaper like the Wall Street Journal ought to get your attention in a hurry. Spies keep intelligence from Donald Trump on leak concerns. Decision to withhold information underscores deep mistrust between intelligence community and the president. This is the kind of shit that goes on in a third world. Not the United States of America. So, I don't want to be an alarmist, but you don't tell things to the President of the United States. The gist of the article is this. The intelligence community is, skeptical is not the right word, is leery of the President and his staff's judgment based on their cozy relationship with the Russians. They believe they are fools and are being played like a mandolin. And they are now guarding means and other sensitive things. While they may talk about reporting, they don't talk about the way the information was collected or the source, for fear that that information would be compromised. Pretty incredible story. So I would recommend it to you. Okay. Things that catch my attention. So, wow. That's not normal media hating. Okay. And especially from the Wall Street Journal that tends to be sympathetic to conservatives and have not been too hard on Mr. Trump. But, wow. Did not see that coming. So, with that said, that's got my attention. Now, the United States Marine Corps Band will start the rest of the morning for us. Good morning to you. We're going to talk to Mike Grice in about 10 minutes. Mike, retired colonel in the United States Marine Corps. He's a writer. And we're going to talk to him about Marines leadership and civilian management. Get his thoughts on those two subjects. So we'll do that. And then you're going to hear an interview I did a while ago with Colby Williamson, former sergeant, United States Marine Corps, and Colby, fire team leader, squad leader during the Fallujah fight. And he's now currently a military recruiter for Amazon.com. So it's a great interview. And so you'll hear it again. And Colby is, the interview has two parts to it. The first part is transition, his transition. how long it took him to get where he got to go, what he thinks is his dream job. And I'm sure he'll have other dream jobs after this because he's a pretty successful young guy. But you'll see how long it took him to go to college, then to go, you know, kind of get some marks on his resume that he needed before he thought he would be competitive to get his dream job. So it's certainly a different way of looking at your transition. It's a much longer view of the transitioning. It's not a 6 month, 12 month, 24 month process. Much longer, years, 9 years, 10 years, maybe, to get where you want to go, which he argues should be part of your transition plan. So you'll enjoy it. He's a successful young guy. He's infantry marine, hard nosed kind of a guy. So fun to listen to. And then the gunner's going to join us for a little bit. So all of that coming up, jammed into one exciting Thursday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. So sit back, relax, spend the morning with us. Thanks for doing that. Here you go. A little behind the scenes, like all of a sudden there's an update to my music player, right? And all of a sudden all my music like has vanished, right? Things that I've made, stuff that I've done, now I've got to go track it down and find out where it is, because software now, they're like the Nazis, the music Nazis. Yeah, I'm not a fan. All right, we'll check the weather right now. Currently in Quantico, 38 degrees under cloudy skies. Camp Lejeune, 49 and mostly cloudy. Granbury, Texas, Gunner's Place, mostly sunny and 42. Up in North Dakota, cloudy and 29. Pronan Palms, sunny and 48. Camp Pendleton, mostly cloudy, 44. Camp Smith in Hawaii. What a nice place, man, Hawaii. Cloudy, dark in 73. Okinawa, cloudy, dark in 66. Fallujah, dark, cloudy in 55. At the home of All Marine Radio, Costa Mesa, Newport Beach area of Southern California, 53 degrees with overcast. Yeah, that's what we got going today. So pretty mild weather. Northern California going to get more water, which is probably not a good thing given the issues they're having with dams up there, if you can believe that. Aging infrastructure. If you want to Google some eye-opening things, Google aging infrastructure in the United States. And then I'll give you one other one to Google if you're looking to do some interesting reading. The second one would be Google underfunded pensions, underfunded public pensions. and then watch what you see in that one. Now, these are pensions that are supposed to be there. Okay? They're supposed to be there. And so they're not there. They haven't been funded. So pretty interesting reading. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Mike Grice, he will join us. And that coming up on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. Are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
More than 2 million Americans have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the Department of Veterans Affairs reports that approximately 11 to 20% of those warriors may have experienced symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. As we recognize PTSD Awareness Month, Real Warriors Campaign volunteer Meg Mitchum, a former Army combat medic who served in Iraq, encourages fellow warriors to reach out when they need help.
The hardest step was admitting that I needed help coping with PTSD. Once I did, my command and unit fully supported me, and I was able to get the care I needed. Getting support helped me succeed in the military and now in my civilian career.
If you or a loved one is coping with an invisible wound, resources are available and they work. For more information, visit the Real Warriors campaign at realwarriors.net or call 866-966-1020.
As we recognize the service of America's men and women in uniform, let's also honor the families who sacrifice so much every day. Military families endure frequent deployments and separations. They carry on while their loved ones are sent into harm's way and wait patiently for their safe return. If you really want to honor a veteran, look for ways to support their families and thank them for their sacrifices. Go to legion.org/honorveterans to find out how you can help.
This is Montel Williams. As a U.S. Navy and Marine Corps veteran, I know the sacrifice that our servicemen and women make for us every single day. If you're a veteran or a military member transitioning out of the service, help is available to you. The U.S. Department of Labor can help you get training, find a good job, or further your education. Contact the Veterans Employment and Training Service at 866-487-2365 or visit dol.gov/vets.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. And as promised, Mike Grice joins us, Colonel, United States Marine Corps, retired. And Mike, first of all, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. I was a retired lieutenant colonel, just for clarity, so if nobody thinks that I'm trying to work my way up after retirement. But
work the system.
Great to talk this morning.
Work the system in retirement.
That's right.
All right.
A game for that bigger retirement.
Exactly. We all and everybody's angling for it. You know that. Exactly. Well, first of all, thank you for doing this, and it's always good to have you on.
It's great to be on. It's been a while.
Yep. Yep. Let's. I've got a question for you.
Sure.
A current events question, and then we'll talk about the topic at hand today, and that is Marines on Management, talking about our leadership skills, what translates, what doesn't translate to the civilian world. So,
sure.
First question, a general question: what do you make of the general tone of the nation now? Are you concerned about it? Do you think it's just growing pains? Has it broken squelch for you relative to concern? Where do you, as you watch this whole, sometimes the theater of the absurd, it seems, play out, I see elements of things that make me feel good. General Mattis, Secretary Mattis, in Europe, talked to our NATO allies and telling them in pretty, well, I can imagine very blunt terms, not very blunt, but very polished, but very forceful, because that is his style, way to say, hey, look, this is the agreement. The agreement is 2%. Some of you guys aren't coming close. And American kids, you know, and the American government can't care more about your security than you do, so you guys need to get after it so this whole thing can work together. To me, that makes me feel good. To me, it's the way we should do it. It's a message we should send with people that are pros at sending it. I'm looking at a story right now, and I'm going to read you the headline. It's in the Wall Street Journal. And the story is, spies keep intelligence from Donald Trump on leak concerns. Decision to withhold information underscores deep mistrust between intelligence community and the president. The story goes on to detail how the sources and methods by which intelligence is collected is withheld from some meetings with the Trump administration because of their relationship with Russia, and the intelligence community has judged them as less than trustworthy. When you hear something like that, does that break squelch for you in terms of what in the hell is going on or not?
Well, a couple answers to that. First, I think that when you're speaking about Secretary Mattis and him going to our partners who have been our partners, you know, essentially, you know, since we closed down the Second World War, and going up to NATO and saying, hey, here's the deal, everybody needs to pony up what they need to pony up, which you agreed to do, couldn't agree with him more. I think that as America became the sole superpower after the wall fell and after the Soviet Union collapsed in the early 1990s, I think that a lot of our partners just took it for granted that America, you know, big America is going to take care of everything. And it's expensive. I spent a couple tours in Iraq and a couple tours in Afghanistan working with our partners, who many of which who are tactically fantastic, but have come to rely on America for a lot of their logistical concerns, a lot of things that they should be taking care of themselves. So I think that Secretary Mattis is saying things in a way that have needed to be said for a while. And I think that bleeds over to the second part of the question, the kind of the trust side, and maybe the trust mismatch between intelligence and the current administration. I think current administration says things the way that they need to be said. They can be quite blunt, and they can be politically very, very unpolitically correct. And they just kind of come out. I think that there's a lot of one-way transmission from the administration without vetting it out to everyone who could possibly have an opinion, which I believe is what the previous administration did. So we've gone from trail stop to trail stop. We've gone from where there are very measured and almost meaningless statements coming from the administration to now. I mean, every time that something comes out, it's a brick through a window. So I think there's uncertainty. And when there's uncertainty, everybody tends to safe up and take a step back from what's going on and kind of, you know, make sure that their rice bowls are protected. So in my opinion, it's a change that's been overdue. I also don't necessarily believe that anybody out who doesn't have a TSSCI clearance really knows what's going on. I think it's a lot of it's anecdotal. I love the Wall Street Journal. I think it's probably the best paper out there. But it's still a newspaper, right. And it's still people who are not in the same rooms talking to the same people with the same clearances at the same time. I think there's a lot of conjecture and if it's based on sources, you know, people talking about school. I'm not particularly concerned. I think that we've needed a breakthrough window for a long time. And I think collectively, the clutching of pearls and the wringing of hands about the things that are being said and done are okay. You know, we've needed that. If we are going to be a nation, nations have interests. We should be able to look at our national policies, and we should be able to look at our place in the world. If we are going to be a global superpower, then we are a national global superpower. We're the United States of America, not the United States of the world. And since the nation has interests, we absolutely should defend them. And I think that that's one thing that the current administration said they were going to do before they got in power, and now they're doing it. So what's going to happen afterwards? I don't know. Let me put it this way. I'm not concerned enough to start building a cellar in my backyard and stocking it with chow guns, ammo, and generators yet.
So you're not going into prepper mode yet?
No, not serious prepper right. mode. You know, I've like any other Marine and former Marine. I guess I'm a prepper by definition, but I don't see it going to that level. Certainly okay. not to the level of the early 1960s, where people were concerned that nuclear bombs are going to start detonating across the United States. Okay. So could it get worse? Sure. Could it get better? Sure. I just think that a lot of people across the world are facing the practical reality that the game has fundamentally changed from the perspective of the United States. So we'll see.
Okay.
It's interesting times.
Interesting times we live in. No, you know, I'll tell you what, I don't disagree with your take. See, this is more when you hose the barrel out, you know, you're going to get a lot of gunk at the bottom. And
right.
it's the process of hosing the barrel out. Right. My only lament, I guess, is that I wish he would be a little bit more measured in his actions, which would inspire confidence in me that, you know, yeah, this is just kind of hand-wringing. So, anyway, so I don't think that's going to happen.
And that's why I think that particularly in the military and particularly in the Marine Corps, when you start out as a young lieutenant, and you're responsible for briefing people, you know, the ability to stand up and shoot from the hip gets beaten out of you pretty young. So I think that part of this is communication learning for the administration, and in that words have power, and when the president says things happen.
Right.
And I think the gravity of that hopefully is settling in.
All right, we'll see. I've written it all down, and we'll see what happens. I'm with you, though. I think we all, you know, we all see the need for the barrel to be rinsed out and growing pains. I think in our world, though, it comes with a little bit more things are a little bit more locked down than what we see now. So anyway,
mm-hmm.
the anxiety understandable. Let's talk about you. We'll kind of plow some old ground. Give me about 5 minutes of a bio. Born and raised where?
I was born and raised in born in New Mexico, raised in Colorado, and spent there until I enlisted. So I graduated high school, enlisted, was in the reserves in college as an artilleryman. I was with Papa Battery 5th Battalion, 14th Marines in Aurora, Colorado. Started out with 8-inch battalion, was in 8-inch howitzer battalion for 5 years. Then we retubed to 109s, which are 155 millimeter self-propelled howitzers.
Mm-hmm.
Got my commission after several years of college, a couple more than most. But I guess I was on the 6-year plan for college. But then spent, you know, another couple decades as an artilleryman in the artillery community, most of my time with the 11th Marine Regiment. Spent some time with 31st MEU. I was actually overseas when 9/11 happened. And we went down to East Timor for humanitarian operations, and we're preparing to do NEOs kind of across that part of the South Pacific.
Hold on. Where did you go to college?
University of Colorado.
University of Colorado. So you get out, then you join the Marine Corps. You do the
No, I actually joined out of high school.
You joined out of high school, went in the reserves. You go, your commissioning source, PLC, ROTC,
MESA,
OCC. Yeah, the real men of the Marine Corps. That's right. They were like jonesing on it when they were 3 years old, okay? They like came to a mature decision and said, that might probably be for me. I haven't been staring at Uncle Festus's wall photo for 50 years and decided I should do this. It came to me. OCC's backbone of the Marine Corps. Anyway, so, all right, so you do all these operations. You come back in, you're an artilleryman as a reservist and as an officer. Do you continue your career as an artilleryman?
Yeah, I sure did. So I started out at 3rd Battalion, 11th Marines, up at lovely 29 Palms, one of the Huns of the High Desert.
You bet.
As a lieutenant, you know, did kind of the standard lieutenant stuff. As a forward observer, battery executive officer, did some time in the fore shop. Went to Fort Sill, where I was a gunnery instructor for a few years. From there to amphibious warfare school. We drink from the mighty cup of the Marine Corps at Quantico. Expeditionary warfare school now.
Exactly.
Then I headed out to the West Coast and became a shameless homesteader. And did 5 consecutive assignments on the West Coast. Was with 2nd Battalion, 11th Marines, full time with 11th Marine Regiment. Did 3 years on the recruit depot as a battalion XO and the director of DI School West. I did some time with 1st Anglico, a couple pumps to Iraq. From there, I went to 5th Battalion, 11th Marines, EWTG PAC, where I was the Expeditionary Fires Chief. From there, I took command of 1st Anglico. Went back to Afghanistan, and from there went back to 11th Marine Regiment on my way out the door and retired.
Give me your two favorite tours that you did.
That's a great question. My favorite tour, and favorites are very.
I know. Don't give me
interesting word. I would say
don't give me the general officer speak.
Yeah, well, I mean, the most impactful in my life,
right?
In retrospect, was my first tour to Iraq. I did two tours to Ramadi. So I was there in 2005, 2006, 2007. When I was there in 2005 and 6, it was tough. We were fighting every day. And, that was my most kinetic tour. So spent a lot of time shooting at people who were shooting at me and, dropping bombs on people who were trying to kill my friends. And it's one of those things that at the time is bewildering, in that you're just in it. It becomes your entire life. And now that I've got better side of a decade looking at it in retrospect, you know, I look back and I can't believe some of the things I saw, some of the things that I've seen done, some of the things that I was a part of, and it really shaped the rest of my life, quite frankly. And it's something that I think about it every day, just like anybody else who's been there does. So I think that was my most impactful, and as horrible as it was, I'd go back and do it again tomorrow.
Why?
My second favorite tour was probably deploying with the 31st MEU, because it was great. You went to Okinawa. This was before and during 9/11. So it was old Marine Corps, which the new Marine Corps is getting back to. Deployed to Camp Hansen. We did our workups. We're getting ready to do MEU X3. A typhoon blows into town, and boom, 9/11. So we skip SOC X. We get the hey, you guys are SOC qualified. And we go down to East Timor, and we start churning around that part of the world, getting ready to evacuate, 8,000-10,000 Americans in case things really go south. So at that point in time, it was an opportunity to do what I joined the Marine Corps to do. And then for the next decade, I kept doing what I joined the Marine Corps to do. So, I did my last 5 years in the Marine Corps, I did 4 combat deployments, 2 to Iraq, 2 to Afghanistan. And it got to the point where, it was, like I said, everything you could ever want as a Marine. And then woke up one day, looked at my family and said, I owe them too, and rang ashore.
All right. So they have a career in a nutshell to include favorite tours. Now, let's talk about what you've done since you've got out. You got out of the Marine Corps when?
January 1st, 2012.
Okay. All right, and so in the intervening, going on, 4 years plus, what have you been doing?
Well, I got out, I went, used the GI Bill, went back to school and got my MBA at University of Southern California. Ended up, not by intention, but kind of just through affectation, working with transitioning veterans. I like to write. I used to write a lot of articles in the Gazette and whatnot. But I wrote, when I was getting out of the Marine Corps, I looked around and said, there's got to be an after action on what it takes to get out. You know, there's after actions for everything. Right. Well, I looked around and there wasn't one. So I wrote had a blog called Orders to Nowhere, and I just blogged about it, about the things that I experienced as I was getting out, and turned it into a book called Orders from Nowhere, Orders to Nowhere. Ended up, that book kind of got me, ended up standing up a nonprofit organization called MVP Vets to help veterans transition into the life sciences industry. So helped create a successful nonprofit from an idea to kind of a thriving nonprofit. From there, I helped another nonprofit called PsychArmor for a while and then entered the corporate sector. So I am currently the vice president of sales for a company called Boost Oxygen.
Boost Oxygen. All right.
Boost Oxygen, yep.
Talk to me about management skills. We talk so much about leadership in the Marine Corps. And then, you know, and it's great to have you on because of your writing savvy and all of that and those experiences. We'd like to think all of that translates very easily, or sometimes we don't. And I guess the major thing that a lot of guys feel is an uncertainty. I'm going from a world that embraces discipline, that has lived a certain way. I've spent time in combat. Now I'm going to go to a world that doesn't know any of that. How do I fit in, especially as a leader? Where do I fit in? My instinct when things go wrong is to grab it by the throat, to, you know, to be direct and to get things done. Is that what the civilian world wants? Do they value that? Or am I simply going to alienate people and sign my own death warrant at a company that I've taken a job at? So I want to explore that. So walk us through, as we begin to migrate out of the Marine Corps and we begin to evaluate what we are and what this new world is going to require from us, give me your thoughts about that whole evaluation process as I look to the future.
Sure. having spent several years in that space, I can tell you that there's three types of people getting out of the Marine Corps. And the same goes for all services. But you have your first termers, whether you're getting out as a corporal or a first lieutenant.
Right.
You have kind of your mid-termers, people who face are at that 10-year point. And they're like, hey, am I going to stick it out for 10 more, or am I going to yank the cord? Generally, you're talking, you know, staff sergeants, sergeant, staff sergeant level, or, you know, captain majors. And then you get to the retirees, which is what I was, 20 to 20 plus years in uniform, who are now facing, you know, getting out, whether you're a senior staff NCO, whether you're an officer, you're facing a lot of the same challenges. The youngsters who are getting out, I call them youngsters because I'm old, but the first termers, they are in probably one of the best positions to be transitioning because they're generally in their 20, early to mid 20s. They are entering a job market where their experience completely eclipses what anybody else has done. So when you think about somebody who's 18, they go to college for 4 years, they get out, and they're going to an employer and they say, yeah, I was in, you know, Delta Tau Chi and, you know, I was in charge of stacking BBs and it was awesome. And you talk to somebody, it's like, yeah, I just got back from Afghanistan where I was in charge of the health and welfare of 42 people, or, you know, a dozen people as a squad leader. That changes the complexity because experience is something that people who are in their early 20s don't have. They, generally speaking, enter a much more robust job market just because there are more jobs that are appropriate and at the job skill rate of somebody who's in their early to mid-20s. The folks who are getting out at about age, you know, 30-ish or so, the captains and young staff and COs, they enter a market where – instead of kind of going into entry-level type stuff, they may be able to penetrate into management. Again, their experience pays huge dividends because if you're a company commander and you're getting out, you can go to someone and say, hey, I was in charge of a rifle company. Yeah, I had over 100 Marines and sailors that I had to take care of. I had to train. I had to take overseas. We had to do all these things. And the competition is, you know, hey, I was professionally stacking BBs at Company X for a couple of years, and now I'm going to go back and get my MBA. So that's a better situation because, generally speaking, people who are getting out at the 10-year mark have education and experience. For staff NCOs, they are able to come out. Many staff NCOs are getting their education before they get out, which is fantastic, but presenting a kind of a compelling value proposition to a hiring company. Then you get to the rest of us, those who stick around for 20 years, 30 years, and have some assumptions about themselves. To be quite frank, those assumptions are completely invalid. And what the assumptions that we have about ourselves when we are retiring as a senior officer or a senior staff NCO is that, hey, I'm a decision maker. I've been all over the world. I've likely been shot at and shot at people. I've had millions and millions of dollars of equipment and other responsibilities. Who wouldn't want me? And the answer is pretty much nobody. Nobody wants you. Because unless you can provide a value proposition to a company that they are willing to write a check for every year or every month, however they pay you, they're not going to hire you. You know, in most people, when you're getting out as a senior officer, senior staff NCO, you're looking, you know, everybody wants to make $100,000. So if I was to walk into a company, say I was infantry battalion commander, or in my case, I was a CO of 1st Anglican Combat. Look at all this stuff I did. An employer's going to look at me and say, okay, that's great. Well, what can you do for me? Because the people that you're competing with when you are exiting as a career Marine, sailor, soldier, airman, whatever, they've got 20 years experience in their business. You know, when you come in and say, hey, I'm a leader, well, guess what? They're leaders too. They're different leaders, and different isn't wrong. They are more managers than leaders, but you're competing with people. You want to go work at GE, and you won't say, hey, I would be perfect going in and leading this organization and helping you get better. You know, I've been overseas. Well, they have people who have been running plants in Mexico, and they have people who have been who've done tours in China. The fact that you've been overseas is much less compelling, perhaps, than it used to be. The fact that you're decisive and you make decisions. Successful people in the civilian world make decisions, too. And what I would say about this is we say, you know, I can make a decision in a second. Well, the reason that a person in uniform can make a decision in a second, because you got 20 years baked in. You know, you've seen everything from when you went to boot camp or OCS all the way up to where you assumed command or being a senior enlisted leader in the Marine Corps. So you make decisions because that's all you know. That's your entire life. So walk into a plant floor for General Electric where, you know, they're making, you know, million-dollar machines for the healthcare industry. And somebody comes up and says, hey, the left-handed blue widget on that MMR machine's busted. What am I going to do? You have no idea. So I think that the biggest thing I would say for those who are transitioning at the retirement level is you need to take a step back and you really need to evaluate yourself and say, what value would I give to a company? And the fact of what you were is as interesting as it is irrelevant. What do you bring and what can you provide is much, much more important. It's pretty humbling because when you go out there, you're used to being in charge. You're used to having people around. You're used to walking into a room, and when you look around the room, you know who everybody is. You know, even if you've never met them, you know what rank they are. Right. You know what jobs they're going to have. You know who's going to sit where. You know who's going to be getting coffee and who's going to be drinking it. You walk into a corporate boardroom, you have no idea. In the tech world, you could be a retired colonel who's 50 years old working for a 25-year-old. So all of those kind of base assumptions that you're able to make because you have a career inside the insular world of the Marine Corps, they don't necessarily transfer. And what I've found is a lot of people get mad about that. It's like, well, you know, these civilians are all screwed up, man. If they would only do this and this and this, they'd be better. I'm like, dude, you know, that would be like a mid-level manager at GE coming into a regimental commander and saying, hey, I can run one of your battalions. You know, I've been overseas. I've managed hundreds of people. I've managed millions of dollars. You know, why can't I do your job? That's what you're doing when you walk into a company. So I my strongest counsel is, again, do some self-evaluation. Find out what you want to do and then figure out how to do it. You're going to have to eat some humble pie because you're an individual contributor. You're not going to have a one shop or a two shop or a three shop or a four shop. You know, you're not going to have a driver. You're not going to have somebody who, when you walk out of your office, is going to say, hey, sir, what can I do for you? It just doesn't work that way. So it's a very long answer to a very short question, but a little introspection helps. I have friends who are still convinced that they are trying to find a company that needs a sergeant major, or that they're looking for their next CEO,
right.
You got to earn your stripes on the outside just like you earn your stripes on the inside.
Mike Rice, my guest, former Marine Lieutenant Colonel, and we're talking transitioning. We're talking Marines on management. The evaluation piece as you walk out varies to extremely in demand for our first term and even our midterm guys. Our late term guys, little bit different situation. What is the best piece of advice that you could give each one of those three segments if we pied it up that way?
I would say for the youngsters is if you don't have a degree, use the GI Bill. It is the best benefit that has been offered since the Second World War. Go back to school. There are a lot of benefits that you can get with the GI Bill. There's also an incredible infrastructure that is very veteran-friendly in our higher education across the United States. That if you take your experience for 4 years and you bolt on a college degree, you are incredibly employable. The thing I would say to be careful of is don't fall into the kind of the, hey, I got out, somebody owes me something, which I've seen. Nobody owes anybody anything. You know, every one of us volunteered and every American paid their taxes. So nobody owes you a damn thing. Get over it and just move on. And a lot of the youngsters are able to do that. That being said, I have a lot of friends that I served with who are really having a hard time. You know, PTSD, it's a lot to ask of a 19-year-old to go out and kill people for a couple of tours and then come back and turn them loose on society. Get the help you need. The VA is not a bad place. It gets a bad rap. But if you can't sleep at night and, you know, you're not the way you were before you left, get help. There's no stigma to that. It's all good. That would be my recommendation for the youngsters.
Okay.
For the mid-level guys,
right.
If you're staffing soon and you don't have your degree, go get it, just like the youngsters, because, again, that will be very compelling. If you are a commissioned officer with a degree in whatever, I'd go back to school also and get a master's degree in whatever discipline is that you want to pursue. You know, quite frankly, it's an MBA. But, you know, I have officers who've got out who are now medical doctors. I have officers who've gotten out who have pursued either the sciences or liberal arts, and they're out doing something that they want to do. You know, they're teachers, and they went out and done it. I go back to higher education with the GI Bill is the strongest thing. Again, you got to get over yourself when you're at that age. Employers are gun shy because when they see veteran and they see particular United States Marine Corps veteran with combat experience, all they hear is Full Metal Jacket.
Right.
You know, so you have to temper that down. Be proud of your service, but don't use it as the basis for the rest of your life. You can't say, hey, I was a Marine, so therefore I can do this. What you have to say is, I have these experiences which help me be more effective to help your company by doing this. For the senior guys, to be just completely frankly honest, get over yourself, to eat that humble pie, take a step back, and then see what you want to do. Most of my friends have gone into somewhere in the contracting world, which is a pretty close fit to where you came from. I did a little bit of contracting when I got out. It's a very good place to go if that's what you want to do. If you want to actually go into the nonprofit space, that's where you add a lot of value. In the nonprofit space, the mighty dollar is not the most important thing. It's what that organization is doing. And it's a very good it's a cultural fit where you can go and feel good about yourself because you made a difference somewhere every day. The money's not as good, but the intangibles, I think, can be very, very beneficial. And if you want to go in the corporate sector, you know, learn about the corporate sector and be prepared to go in and work in the salt mine, be an individual contributor, and work for somebody who's 20 years younger than you. So you really have to get past a lot of those things that kind of built your entire career on and accept the fact that you're all that in a bag of chips, but you take that uniform off, you're just another dude who's getting gray.
Mike Grice with the bad news for everybody, right? So pay attention. The book is called, I'll let you promote, Mike. Email says this. Hey, Mac, I heard Mike mention the book he wrote. I didn't have my pen out. Could he mention again? So, Mike, what is it?
Yeah, Orders to Nowhere.
Orders to Nowhere.
Yeah, it's available on Amazon. Like I said, I wrote an after action for my transition. I need to update it. It's updated as of about a year behind in updating on some things. But what I found to be the most challenging thing of going from being a uniform-wearing Marine to a valued veteran is kind of the hellish spot of transition, to where you've got to turn in all your stuff. You've got to get your final physical. You've got to meet with the VA. There's a lot of mechanical things that you have to do that, quite frankly, the Marine Corps and Department of Defense have gotten a lot better at in the last few years.
Right.
But it's still challenging. And then how do you find out what you want to do with the rest of your life? It's pretty daunting when the day after you take your uniform off, you look around and say, well, now what? What do I want to do? And for me, it was quite a challenge to figure out what it was I really wanted to do. So I like to write, so I wrote a book about it.
Okay. And they can find that right now on Amazon. All they got to do is do a search on
Orders to Nowhere.
Orders to Nowhere.
It'll pop right up.
All right.
Buy one for your friends.
There you go. Tell a friend. Next question. What do we have that they most desire? And I say that as if you've been a leader in the Marine Corps, from corporal to commanding general, what is it about the Marine Corps that maybe assume about us and what they want from our experience?
Well, I'll preface my answer with when you get out, particularly as a retiree, when you're in your mid 40s to early 50s, you are going to have to effect a penetration into a company, and where you get into that company is going to be lower than you want to be, making less money than you'd like to make, and with less responsibility than you think you should have. If you can go in there with the perception of this is the launching point to make my career better, and I'm going to do the best I can to provide the best value for the organization, that penetration is going to be very successful, and you are going to eclipse all of the civilians you work with, because what civilians are looking for and don't necessarily have, many do, but many don't, are really two things. One is taking care of people. And I don't mean making sure they get paid and stuff like that, but a genuine interest in the people that you work with, the people that work for you, and the people you work for. Every leader is making sure in the Marine Corps, you got to make sure that the family's taken care of. You got to make sure that, when Jones is coming in, he's got a scowl on his face, you're going to walk up and say, hey, Jones, what's going on? You're not just going to yell at him.
Right.
That's incredibly valuable, because that is something that is not really baked into the civilian management pipeline. Some companies do a good job of training to that. Interestingly, McDonald's is probably one of the best when it comes to training people on how to deal with people. In full disclosure, I worked at McDonald's when I was in high school too. But that type of interpersonal empathy and caring for others, that's not natural on the outside as it is on the inside. I think that that's probably one of the most important values that you can bring that they're looking for. And unfortunately, it doesn't really come out on a resume. It's not something that you can just write down and say, hey, I'm very empathetic and I'm really good with other people. You can write it down, but if you can get in and demonstrate that, it is incredibly, incredibly, incredibly powerful. Another thing is public speaking. The biggest phobia for most people is the fear of speaking in front of other people.
Right.
You make it past Lance Corporal, you make it past Second Lieutenant, you are used to standing up in front of people who are very critical and speaking and performing and acting. And the ability to get up there when things are stressful and to be able to perform and speak and talk and be articulate and in front of those who are not capable of doing that is very powerful. And that the way that comes across to a hiring company is really, again, not your resume, but how you do in your interview. It comes from networking. It comes from meeting other people who are like, you know what, that's the kind of person I want in my company. Particularly as a retiree, what you put on your resume, that's just a way to get a chance to talk to somebody. It's not going to get you hired. They're hiring you as a person, not you as a commodity. And what I mean by that is they're looking for someone who's going to come in, will understand and be a part of that culture inside that company and be able to add value more than just at the bottom line and how much money you bring in or whatever that metric may be, but making their company a better place. So the ultimate answer to your question is culture. If you can bring the leadership side and the empathetic side of leadership, true leadership, and bring that to a company, that is something that they may not say they want, and they may not say they need, but they need it and they want it.
We have that. We can do that. That's
every Marine, like I said, right. If you made it past second lieutenant in PFC, you have that. But again, that's to kind of a little further answer the question is that your ability to perform those things is all about the impressions that you make and the people that you meet. When you're 22 years old, you know, you're going to be filling a job that could be filled by a lot of 22-year-olds. You know, when you're 30, you're filling a job that could be held by a smaller number of 30-year-olds. When you're looking for, essentially what you're looking for when you retire is an executive position in the company. Well, they're looking for one person. They're looking for the right person who's the right fit with the right skills to fill that job. You have the right attributes, and I would differentiate between skills and attributes. Skills are things that you do. Attributes are who you are. The who you are piece is what is very valuable to a corporate entity. The what you do, the skills piece, that's on you to be able to present your skill set in such a manner that it's valuable, value added to the company. So I would say that to make yourself more valuable, one, demonstrate those attributes. You know, I got my first. I ended up at, standing up this nonprofit because I was parking cars on Halloween night at a haunted house for my Boy Scout, my son's Boy Scout troop. So it's a much longer story than that, but just through some incidental networking contact, I ended up with a standing up a nonprofit, which was a big part of my departure in my first career post service. So you have to be, you know, you got to be on your game all the time, demonstrating that. You know, that value that you could present to somebody. So anyway.
Okay, I want to ask you, one of the things that you said resonated with me because it was my own personal experience. I asked guys before I got out, is there anything that you would tell me that I don't know? And from a variety of them, I heard, under no circumstances should you speak about your time in combat. And I said, okay, what's up with that? And they said, they're terrified of the whole PTSD, and especially when they hear Marine and that you were in, you know, places like Ramadi and Fallujah, you know, they cannot get the video out of their head and the stories that appear on a regular basis of PTSD guys. So, do not, if they be very general in terms of the way you characterize your service, and I wouldn't mention your time in combat other than to say, yes, I was there. Your thoughts on that?
Well, a couple things. A lot of it depends on where you're going. If you're going to go into the contracting world and defense contracting, generally speaking, you can have a different conversation than if you're not. As a very quick aside, I understand now why we have a VFW hall in every town or an American Legion or something like that in pretty much every town. I didn't understand until I was a combat veteran. But there are some conversations you can only have with other people who have walked on the same ground you have. Remember, the hiring manager and the person that you're talking to in the company has not walked on that ground. So they don't know. You know what? They don't want to know. They want to know what value can you bring to the company? Can you fit the culture? And the third thing, are you a liability if they hire you? To the point where you've heard don't talk about combat, there's absolutely nothing wrong with affirming the fact that you served your country and you served your country in arduous conditions overseas. But beyond that, they're not going to ask, and you shouldn't tell. Because, quite frankly, most of the people who are looking at your resume and making the decision to bring you in for that interview initially is going to be a 23-year-old young woman who is starting out in human resources, who has no military tradition in their family, may not have ever actually met anybody in the military, and as I said earlier, their perspective of the Marine Corps is what they saw in Full Metal Jacket. So you're absolutely right. You need to be careful. The PTSD, you know, if you've killed somebody, you meet the definition of PTSD. I have PTSD, right. Diagnosed by the VA. Right. So if people ask, I say, yeah. And, you know, so does everybody else who's been there. So it's everybody who's a victim of sexual trauma, someone who's been in a car crash, somebody, you know, the PTSD is just how your mind deals with traumatic events afterwards.
Yeah, but we know that, but they don't. They see
well,
it as...
They're getting better. They can't ask that question legally.
Okay.
But if they do, you have to think in your mind. Okay, that's an illegal question. But do I want this job? Do I want to be honest? You know, what do I want?
No, I'm going to lie. I'm going to lie at that. I'll be straight up. Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I'm lying. I'm going to say no. I don't.
Yeah, it's it's your personal choice.
Right.
I would say that I have not been asked that question, but I have had friends who have. And interestingly, I had a conversation with a young woman who had PTSD because she was a victim of sexual trauma. And actually, you know, she'd been raped earlier in her life, and she was like, it was not in a context of being hired, but it was in a separate conversation, and was actually able to have a much deeper conversation about, you know, about things. It was interesting. But my point being that the perception is that we're all crazy, that we're all bloodthirsty, that we all have killed tons of people, and that we're all nuts. So you need to deconstruct that a little bit and say that, you know, the counters to those queries, if they don't ask you directly, say, yeah, I was one of the 2 million Americans who has served in Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, I'm a veteran. There's 26 million veterans in the United States, and I'm one of them.
I like that.
So I mean, there's ways to kind of diffuse that perception when you let people know that you know you're not the only person around that's that has the experiences that you have, that can be helpful.
Mike Grice, former Lieutenant Colonel in the Marine Corps, not a former Marine. Okay, let's get that straight. So just so we all have our titles down. Mike, a final question for you.
Sure.
And I love having you on, and we'll do it more often because of your insights. Do you also have to have a serious conversation with yourself in terms of what do I do as a leader? Because there's a certain way that I don't care if you're a first term corporal, if you're a second term sergeant, staff sergeant, captain, major. When things tend to go wrong, we have a certain way that we handle it. It tends to be direct. And there tends to be a sense of urgency there. Do those qualities need to be measured in the civilian sector? Because again, it's not the same place.
I would say, yes. We just call it tactical patience. One of the problems with being decisive is you make decisions, and we fully understand the opportunity cost of time and decision-making. That, you know, favor fortunes the bold. You make a decision now that becomes the point of departure for decisions in the future that you can shape to be successful. The decisions in the corporate world, in the civilian world, generally speaking, are not life and death critical. They are important, but they're not the point where every time you're positioned to make a decision that you have to make it immediately. Use tactical patience. You got to take a step back, and what they say, similar to what you heard in the military, is who are the stakeholders? Why is this decision being – why do we have to make this decision? What are the effects of this decision? Is there a cost to me waiting to make this decision? And if you can say that, you know, there's no cost to me waiting to make this decision, then wait and get more information. Because one of the things that we have in the military is when you're the boss, when you're the commanding officer and you make a decision, everybody expects you to make a decision, and they execute that decision. That's just the way it works. The corporate sector, you make a decision, everyone who's impacted by the decision is going to question it. And they have every right to, and the mechanism is they can say, no, I'm not doing that. Then what do you do? Or they'll come back and say, well, I need more resources for that. You know, you need to write me a check for $100,000 to make that decision come into effect. Well, that's going to come out of your budget. There are all these different facets that come into decision making that if you can execute tactical patience, are generally going to be, you're going to have a better outcome. That being said, there are positions that you're going to take where people want you to make decisions immediately. They hired you for that reason. You need to find out and do some introspection and talking to your bosses and your cohorts to find out if that's one of those roles and if that's the time that it's appropriate to do that.
The book is entitled Orders to Nowhere, the after-action report from a career Marine's transition back to the civilian world. You can find it on Amazon. His name is Mike Grice, former Lieutenant Colonel, United States Marine Corps, CO of Anglico, that operated in and around Ramadi in the 2005-2006 time frame. Did a lot of quality work there. I know I was there in 2006 in Fallujah with the 5th Marine Regiment, and we kept our eye on those guys. Mike, always a pleasure to have you on. We won't wait as long to have you back on because I thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. The segment's entitled Marines on Management and great advice. Thank you very much.
Thanks. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Look forward to doing it again soon.
Okay, Mike. Have a great day. Thank you.
You bet.
All
thanks.
Right. There you go. I'll tell you what. You talk about hitting it right on the screws. Boom. Mike Grice. thought about it a lot. And that is great, great, great advice. So, wow, fired up. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next. You're going to hear from Colby Williamson. He's a military recruiting manager at Amazon.com. So sit back, relax, enjoy the morning. And Colby Williamson going to talk about his transition that landed him really a job that he loves. So more of that coming up next right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.